direct and indirect detection of dark matter. So the plan of the talk is the following. I would say a few words about dark matter at accelerators. This has been already briefly discussed this morning. But in particular, I want to focus on the question what we can learn, actually, on the nature of the dark matter from observations at LHC. And then I will move on to particle astrophysics experiments, so direct detection. And again, I will ask this, the very same question in the framework of direct detection experiments. And then I'll move on to indirect detection. And in particular, I'll tell you a few words about this gamma ray satellite, GLAST, that should be launched this week. And there are big expectations for what GLAST can do for particle astrophysics. Now, I will only show this one slide on the evidence for dark matter. Dark matter is one of the pillars of modern cosmology, so I don't think I need to motivate here searches for dark matter. A bunch of observations on very different scales require either very sophisticated modifications of the laws of gravity, or a very big fraction of the total matter in the universe should be dark. So we've heard about this big chunk in the previous talk, the dark energy, 72%. I want to focus here in this talk on the dark matter. Now, what do we know about dark matter particles? Not much. But still, we can constrain the parameter space, at least the phenomenological parameter space of dark matter, with a series of astrophysics and astrophysical and cosmological observations. So this is a sort of a review of all the constraints that can be set on the nature of the dark matter particle. And the first and foremost, maybe, constraint is the relic abundance of this particle. So we know it with an accuracy of a few percent, at least in the framework of the standard model of cosmology. Then we know that this particle must be cold, and this can be the fact that it's cold means that it must be non-relativistic at the epoch of structure formation. And this also can be made very precise. And then I will not go through all of them, but let me just mention that we have, let's see, well, we're pretty confident that it's neutral. We have to satisfy constraints on coming from Big Bang nucleosynthesis. Now, there is recently there has been quite a lot of activity in the framework of the discussion of what dark matter particles can do to stars, essentially, whether we can observe modifications of the structure and evolution of stars with dark matter particles. It is sort of difficult to induce modifications of the structure of the sun, for instance. And even if you use heliosismic observations, that they can really probe the interior of the sun in a very precise way down to radii of the order of 100 of the solar radius. It seems difficult, at least if you plug in typical values for supersymmetric particles, to obtain interesting constraints. But there are other systems where this can be relevant. And in particular, people these days are focusing on population 3 stars, so the very first stars that form in the universe, or on compass stars, in particular those that form or that are present at the center of big galactic halos. We want particles to be collisionless. Some of you may recognize this, the picture of the so-called bullet cluster that has been considered as a possible direct evidence for the dark matter particles, and as opposed to explanations in the framework of modifications of gravity. And you want the couplings of your particle to be consistent with all sorts of different experiments, and in particular with direct observation, direct detection experiments that we will discuss briefly. And then you have different constraints that come from astrophysical observations, so in particular from the observations of gamma rays, in particular as observed by EGRET. And this is also, since the new experiments such as GLAST would observe gamma rays, you expect that with a better sensitivity, actually you can find traces of dark matter in gamma rays. And then you have all sorts of other astrophysical bounds. This is a picture of a neutrino telescope, and we will see in a moment how this can constrain the nature of dark matter. And the 10th point is more like a philosophical point than actually a technical point. If you want to propose a new dark matter candidate, you have to be able to probe it somehow with some kind of experiments. Now, just to give you an idea that All of this can be made very precise. These are different plots taken from different publications. And there's been really a lot of activity in this field. And what you can do is you can go ahead and constrain the scattering cross-section of dark matter. All of these plots have the mass of the dark matter particle on the x-axis, and you're constraining different quantities on the y-axis. Now, without going through all the details, let me just mention that this is a constraint on the scattering cross-sections, and the vertical axis of this plot is over many decades in scattering cross-section. Some of these constraints are actually model dependent. So every time you have a specific model, you need to check what the underlying assumptions on the dark matter are. But still, this is more or less the situation that is summarized here. And then you can constrain all sorts of things. You can constrain if you have spiral neutrinos, the mixing angle of these particles. If you have annihilating particles, you can constrain the annihilation cross-section. And if you have decaying particles, you can constrain the decay time using gamma ray observations, for instance. Now, these are just examples of different studies that have been made in all this, different constraints that have been put on all these parameters. But again, there is a very wide literature on this in this field. Now, if we apply these constraints on all the particles of the standard model, so we have the quarks, leptons, and gauge bosons, we know that there is nothing here that can be made consistent with all the constraints on the dark matter particles. So what people do, we have seen this in quite in detail this morning, is to postulate, well, you have many possible extensions of the standard model. One of the most naive extensions is to postulate that there is a new energy scale of physics and that you have a new hierarchy of particles. And in some of the most simple versions of these extensions of the standard model, you have partners to all the particles and fields of the standard model. So the WIMP, for instance, if you have supersymmetry or here's universal extra dimensions, this is the sector where the WIMP appears. And at this level, it becomes impossible to discuss this in general without giving technical details of how the specific details of the dark matter particle in different theories. But we have heard this morning about neutralino in theories of supersymmetry that would be a partner of the Higgs and gauge bosons. Well, a combination, the lightest combination of the partners of these particles here. And in the case of universal extra dimensions, the most likely candidate is the first excitation of the B boson. So the key point here, well, and everything, of course, can be made very precise. This was a very naive description of extensions of the standard model. But once you specify the particle content and all the couplings of your theory, you can derive the properties for your dark matter candidates, for instance, the neutralino, or can go on and search for alternatives like the Gravitino, Axino, and this neutrino. And in the case of universal extra dimension, you can do the very same thing. You can compute the spectrum of the new particles. So at the tree level, it would be just the size of the extra dimension, but then you will have radiative corrections to that. And then you have all the couplings, the relevant couplings that enter, for instance, the calculation of the relic density, and you can compute the properties of the dark matter also in the context of universal extra dimensions. And in both cases, you can have this most simple scenario most people are most people like, actually, this a particle with a mass scale of 100 GeV or 1 TeV, and with interaction cross sections at the weak scale or below. Now, we have seen this morning that you can search for these particles in accelerators. In processes like for instance, this one. So you produce in colliders very high-colored particles, for instance, the partners of the quarks. Then you follow the decay of these quarks down to the lightest particle of your theory. And actually, this the very same diagram applies in the case of universal extra dimensions once you replace the tildes with the first excitation of the different states. And then what you actually do is to detect the jets coming out of this decay chain and observe some missing energy. Now, this is, as we have seen this morning, this is a little bit maybe naive as to hope that you can infer the properties of the dark matter with good enough accuracy to prove that the dark matter, essentially to determine the theory with enough accuracy. But the important point here is that if you want to prove that that the particles you discover in accelerators are the dark matter, you have at least to prove that the relic density of these particles matches the relic density observed, inferred from cosmological observations. And this morning we have heard in the talk of Thielmann and Plen, and a number of studies are trying to address this problem. And I wanted to show one example of what has been done in literature. So the idea here is the following. You choose benchmark points in your supersymmetric theory, and you choose them as representative of the different regions where a dark matter candidate could be in the parameter space of supersymmetry. And what you do is you simulate the response of LHC to these benchmark scenarios, and then you try to solve the inverse problem. You try to infer from the observations of from the simulated observations, you try to infer the properties of the dark matter, and in particular, try to infer the relic density of the dark matter particle. Now, what you hope is that you can infer the relic density with an accuracy which is comparable with the accuracy of cosmological observations. The problem here is that, this is one example, this is one of the benchmarks. And for those of you who are familiar with this parameter space, this is taken in the branch where you have co-annihilation with the Staus. The relic density is achieved through these type of co-annihilations. And you see that if you only have the Large Hadron Collider, you have a rather flat a posteriori probability for omega H squared, which means that if you have a fiducial, so if the relic density of your benchmark scenario was good enough to reproduce, to match the observations, the error, the relative error on the measurement that you get only from LHC is of order 167%, and there are cases where this is even worse. And actually, this is not unlikely, this is not an unlikely scenario for LHC, that you will not be able to constrain the relic density good enough, and maybe you have to move on to different machines, such as, for instance, the linear collider. But the linear collider will take, it's not clear if and when will be built, and what we want to do is really to go ahead and to combine information you get from accelerators with information you get from other experiments, such as direct and indirect searches. And this is really one of the key points of this thought. There is since there are many experiments, indirect detection, and many more are coming also in indirect detection, it is time probably to build like a common language and to put together the information you get from different experiments. And this is more or less the status of dark matter searches. You have, first of all, colliders. We know that there's the Tevatron at Fermilab, and LHC is about to start at CERN. In red, you see direct detection experiments, and you see them scattered all over the planet, essentially. And they are achieving sensitivities which are just fantastic, I think. And I think it is very promising as a strategy to search for new physics. And then you have other experiments that are, these are the experiments I'm going to discuss now are not really dedicated to dark matter searches, but they can say something about dark matter. In particular, we have gamma ray telescopes, and I'm thinking in particular to Eryshenkov telescopes like HESS in Namibia, Veritas in the US, MAGIC on the Canary Islands, and Kangaroo in Australia that have typically energy thresholds, let's say, of order 50, 100 GeV. Well, 100 GeV for the moment, but the hope is to bring it down to 50 GeV in the future. And then you have non-Archenko telescopes, like you see here, for instance, and Milagro in the US, with a rather high energy threshold, so which are not maybe directly related to at least supersymmetric or, in any case, dark matter at the 100 GeV scale or so, but they can provide interesting constraints. And then you have neutrino telescopes. So you have IceCube at the South Pole, which is already half built, and will search for neutrinos from the sun, coming from the annihilation of dark matter particles, as we will see in a minute. And then you have three sites where people are building neutrino telescopes in the Mediterranean. And there are there is a project to build a kilometer cube scale detector in the Mediterranean. And this probably will depend on whether IceCube will see something interesting or not. So there is a talk dedicated on direct detection, on direct dark matter searches tomorrow morning, so I will not spend much time discussing this. But there are a few points I would like to make. So first of all, let me sketch the idea and the basics of direct detection. You have you build a large detector, and you just wait for a dark matter particle to interact with nuclei in the detector. And what you want to measure is the recoil energy of this nuclei. It is relatively easy to estimate the differential event rate that you can expect for these recoils. And you can estimate the scattering amplitudes whenever you specify whenever you specify your theory, essentially. It's just a matter of calculating the scattering amplitudes with nucleons. And this has been done in literature since long already. But let me also mention that although this has been done already in literature many years ago, there are still some theoretical uncertainties in these cross sections. And this could make things even more complicated when trying to interpreting the results of the experiments. But then you have different techniques to measure the recoil energy of nuclei. And different experiments employ different techniques for the detection of the recoil, the energy of recoils. And the status of direct detection is more or less the following. Again, I will not give you more details because tomorrow morning there is a dedicated talk. But basically, we are down to scattering cross sections of order 10 to the minus 43. For particles of order 50 or 60 GeV, and you see how the sensitivity depends on the mass of the dark matter particle. Now, the leaders in this field are today xenon and CDMS. You see these two solid lines, red lines here, and there are the prospects to go down in the future with one-ton experiments down to cross sections of maybe 10 to the minus 45. So these are overplotted. These shaded regions are the predictions for a minimal supersymmetric standard model. And if you have questions, you can feel free to ask. But these are different groups who have calculated with different methods the regions that would be populated by dark matter particles. And as you can see, there are regions of the parameter space that will not be covered even with one-ton experiments, but there are significant chances of discovery. And the way you define chances depend on how you assign a probability to this cloud of points, which is a very subtle and delicate issue. But the key point I wanted to make is always what you can learn. We have seen that in accelerators, it's going to be difficult to infer the relic density of dark matter particles. Now imagine you have a detection in a direct detection experiment. And what can you say about dark matter particles? So this is adapted from a recent paper of Anne Green. And here you see what is the error inferred mass of the dark matter particle for an input mass that you give to simulate the response of your instrument to this kind of particle. And you see that if you have an experiment like will be the first phase of, so this is more or less equivalent to the exposure of three different phases of super CDMS. You see that for a mass for an input mass larger than 100 GeV, is going to be very difficult to infer the mass of the dark matter particle with an accuracy better than 100%, well, at least on the high mass side. On the low mass side, the situation is slightly better. But essentially, what this means is that if you draw contours in the scattering cross section versus mass plane, these contours at 1, 2, 3 sigma will remain open on the right if the the mass of the dark matter particle is not sufficiently light. So this is quite a likely situation in case of detection, unless you go to really big experiments and always with relatively low mass of the dark matter particle. Now, what you probably can do and should do is to combine information you get from these direct detection experiments with other with something else. And something else means with information that comes from accelerators or with other direct detection experiments. Now, we have tried to play this game. This is just, again, one example of what people are actually doing, just to convey the idea of what people are doing in these days. But this is the case of an experiment called COOP, which is present at Fermilab, and is like one of these old bubble chambers that people used to use for particle physics, but this is tuned for dark matter searches. And what you can do is to combine information that comes from two different targets in the same kind of experiment. So you build two bubble chambers, essentially, with two different targets. And you try to constrain this quantity. So this is just one possible quantity that you can constrain in the parameter space. The scattering cross-section, spin-independent divided by the spin-dependent cross-section of particles as a function of the rate in a given experiment. And what you see is that, so these two clouds of points are for two different candidates, supersymmetric dark matter and universal extra dimensions dark matter. If you have a rate, an observed rate, it's going to be difficult using only this rate to constrain the properties of the dark matter particle. You see that this ratio is essentially undetermined over many orders of magnitude, 3 or 4 orders of magnitude. But then what you can do is to run again the experiment or to use a different chamber and combine the information you get. So these are the points compatible with the first detection. And in case of a detection in the second one, you can pinpoint the properties of this dark matter producing this this effect. You can pinpoint that with much better precision. And as far as the indirect detection is concerned, you have a bunch of experiments. You have GLAST, which is supposed to, as we were saying, supposed to be launched this week. And then you have other experiments like PAMELA and ground-based experiments. And you can use the information that comes from all these experiments to constrain the annihilation cross-section of these particles into particles of the standard model and search for secondary particles, typically photons or electrons and positrons producing synchrotron emission and so on and so forth. Now, in order to do that, you have to specify how dark matter is distributed. And the status of the field is the following. Probably this is the highest resolution numerical simulation that has been performed so far of a Milky Way-like halo. And you have a reference up here. And what you see here is the formation history of a Milky Way-like halo. So this is as a function of decreasing redshift or increasing time, so from the very early phases of the universe down to a redshift of 0. And you see here how the Milky Way halo is formed through the accretion of many small substructures. And this is a zoom in of the same simulation taken from the website of Jörg Diemand. And there is a dedicated workshop actually here at the Perimeter Institute on Saturday and Sunday when people will precisely discuss these substructures in the Milky Way halo. So, there are different targets which are interesting for indirect detection. I don't have time, unfortunately, to discuss them all. But let me say that the galactic center is certainly something that people will be observing, especially with GLAST. maybe not the central, really the center of the halo, but probably an annulus within, around the center would be the best target for searches. Then you have the hope to detect at least some of these dark matter substructures. And this is taken by a paper written with Lydia Pieri and Enzo Branchini. And you will hear a talk, there's a talk on Friday afternoon, I believe, from Lydia Pieri precisely on this topic. And the idea is that you can hope to detect at least over there 10 of these substructures if you're lucky enough. And then you have the possibility to detect the intermediate mass black holes. This is rather speculative, and if you're interested, feel free to ask questions because my time is almost up. But the last point I wanted to make is that given all the uncertainties you have on astrophysics and particle physics, you may wonder whether there is any way to convince particle physicists that you have discovered something based only on astrophysical observations. And what I've listed here in this last slide is five possible observations that would actually convince, well, at least they would convince me that there is some new physics beyond the data that you're observing. And very briefly, these are the observation of annihilation lines in gamma rays, for instance, because if you find the line at 211 GeV, this is something that is very, is impossible to do with standard model physics. And other features in the spectrum of antimatter, for example, if they are peculiar feature, they would be considered smoking gun evidence for dark matter. Then you can hope to detect multiple sources with identical spectrum, as in the case of substructures. And this will be discussed in this satellite workshop on Saturday and Sunday. You can hope to detect high energy neutrinos from annihilations of dark matter at the center of the sun. And this is also some, will be a striking signal that cannot be produced by astrophysical scenarios. And then, or you can go for a multi-wavelength scenarios, a scenario where you compare the emission in different wavelengths, for example, the synchrotron emission coming from electrons and positrons, and the gamma ray emission. And then you can study the gamma ray background produced by annihilation of dark matter at all redshifts. And you can study the angular power spectrum, which should, if dark matter contributes enough to the spec to this gamma ray background, should have distinctive features. So I will stop here. The key messages I tried to, the key points I tried to make today was where there is a huge theoretical and experimental effort, and it's probably time to, you know, go for a multidisciplinary approach that keeps everything into account when trying to infer the properties of dark matter particles. The LHC is about to start, but may not give all the answers we need. And the direct detection would, detection in direct searches would be fantastic. But again, it's going to be difficult to constrain even the mass of the dark matter particle unless the event rate is extremely large. And I have given you at least four or five strategies to get smoking gun evidence from indirect detection. So let's keep our fingers crossed. Thanks.
Questions? Comments? Yes? Yes, in the back.
So I'm sure that tomorrow morning you will hear more about that. It's a very delicate situation, actually, because, as you know, the DAMA collaboration claims to have a modulation of the event rate in their experiment. And the statistical evidence for this modulation is now 8 sigma. So there is probably something like a modulated signal in their experiment. Now, if you try, at least in the most naive particle physics and astrophysics scenario, to infer the mass and cross-section of the dark matter particle that is producing this modulation, this lies in a region of the parameter space which is already ruled out by other experiments such as CDMS and Xenon, which means that if the signal is due to dark matter, it's within a scenario which is very different from our naive understanding of what should be going on in direct detection experiments. It's certainly an interesting signal, but it's very difficult to interpret it in terms of our standard understanding of dark matter.
Questions? Comments? Yes, John.
There's preliminary data published regarding another emerging clusters, ABEL-520. And the data appears to show that the galaxies are and stars are separated in the collisions, but the putative dark matter has not separated from the central baryon plasma according to the lensing results. So this is confirmed. This is direct contradiction to the Bullock cluster result.
In a sense, I would point that they would be against the cold dark matter paradigm, you mean?
Yeah, because yep. It means there wouldn't be collisions.
I agree that it would be challenging for, it would be a big challenge for the cold dark matter scenario if it is confirmed.
Let's thank our speaker and move on to the next one.